show is a part of the Quite the Thing Media Podcast Network.
Hey, everybody.
This is Kim.
And this is Kel. You're listening to Shiny Things.
Oy. What's new, Callie?
Same shit, different flies, you know. Mm-hmm. Just keeping low radar with 2022 until we actually see what it's got in store for us.
Oh, I know. You know, I set my my goal for 2022. I guess you'd call it a resolution.
Yeah, we should call them goals. I like goals better.
I like goals better because it doesn't mean it's like, you don't feel so disappointed in yourself if it doesn't happen.
Right.
But you know my goal was to try to get a little bit more healthy and to lose a few pounds.
Mm-hmm. That was mine.
And I set a date for that little endeavor. And then the date is tomorrow.
Oh.
Oh, no. And then I was thinking, I wonder if I could just push it back till next Monday. But that's probably not a great idea.
Well, the first week. So I always do it this way. I've been trying now for, you know, a couple months. And the weekends are what ruin me.
I know, because you're too accessible and there's too many things to eat when you're at home.
Exactly. So, but even like working from home and things like that, I'm not really a snacker. So I have that going, but I'm at work. I will actually drink water and move around and stuff like that. And then it's like the weekend comes and it's like, nice for work for all week. I'm just going to screw it all up for you.
You are not a junk food junkie. I am.
You like sweets. I like salty.
I like both, actually. I'm not going to lie. I could eat a crap ton of food if I wanted to. But I'm trying to be a little bit better. But I mean, like, alcohol has a lot of calories in it. I haven't really been drinking very much. But now tomorrow, I'm not saying I'm going to be 100% and I'm going to lose weight and I'm going to get fit and all that stuff. But I do want to make a conscious effort to do better. You know, when you get older, you have to put more energy into taking care of yourself. So I'm going to start my treadmill and I'm going to start, you know, trying to eat better. I'm making a conscious effort to be a better Kim.
That's a good goal.
I mean, I'm already pretty freaking good.
Oh, you're awesome.
I know I am. I mean, I wanted you to say it first, but you didn't, so. But really,
because you know you're awesome. I tell you all the time.
From a size 6 to a size 8, and I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but you're like squeezing into that 8.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do something about yourself.
That's my goal, is just to be able to fit into the clothes I have.
I know.
Comfortably fit into my clothes.
I want to get rid of my possum pouch. I should call it my Yeti pouch.
Yeah, that sounds prettier.
Yeah, it does. I'm going to try. I'm not making any promises. So you can next week how I'm doing.
Okay. Well, I'm going to work on it too. Well, we can be each other's buddies about like, hey, I just ate this. And then I could be like, what the fuck, Kim? You said you were going to do better.
You're a freaking loser.
No, I'd be like, it's okay.
No, you can't do that. You're so nice, Kelly. Kelly is too nice. Now me, I say, what's up your ass? Kelly will say, is there something bothering you? No, I'm going to start my treadmill tomorrow. But I'm not going to go crazy because every time I do it, I end up getting shin splints. So I'm only going to do like 10 minutes for the first few days to ease into it.
Right.
Because I don't want to frustrate myself and say, forget it. I don't want to do this. Where's my candy bar?
Or I get on there and I'm like, maybe I'll have some Powerade that's full of sugar.
Like, you're not dehydrated. I'm going to go on my treadmill, but I'm going to drink a chocolate shake while I'm doing it.
Well, actually, the cup holders on my treadmill fit a Truly perfectly.
No. Yeah, but Truly doesn't have a lot of calories. So, I mean, if you're going to drink something, that's probably the best alternative.
That's true.
Not what I'm drinking right now.
Yeah, I got Truly now.
But anyhow. So, Kelly, today I wanted to... Actually, let me back up. I was going through some of our podcasts, and I was looking at some of our numbers, and I came across one on Margaret Ellen Fox, and I was not happy with it.
That was the one where I couldn't join you that week.
Exactly. That's the one that I did solo, and I just was not happy with it. And from now on, if one of us isn't able to do it, we're just not doing it.
Right, because we're a team.
We need each other. We feed off of each other. So I figured that would be a good podcast to redo and see how we do together.
Sounds like a plan to me.
So have you ever heard of Margaret Fox?
I do, and I did listen to the episode, but because my brain is turning to mush, I have not.
A lot of episodes we've had. So Margaret, the last time Margaret Ellen Fox was seen, she was going onto a bus with a stranger she hoped to babysit for. So she was going to meet the stranger. And now for more than four decades, the FBI is still baffled by her disappearance.
Oh my God.
In 2019, authorities released audio evidence in hopes that it could be the key to cracking the unsolved mystery abduction of Margaret Ellen Fox. So the story goes, it was the summer of 1974 in Burlington, New Jersey. School was out for the summer, and 14-year-old Margaret Ellen Fox and her cousin Lynn Park racked their brains in hopes of coming up with something like the perfect idea to make some money over their school vacation. Both girls were very excited. You know, everybody wants that little extra pocket change.
Right.
It would be the first time they'd be earning money to spend on whatever they chose. The plan was decided, and on June 18th, the girls posted an ad in the local paper saying babysitters experienced teenage girls love children, work at your home. Followed up with each girl's home phone number. The next morning, a man identifying himself as John Marshall called the Park home. He stated he and his wife needed a sitter for their 5-year-old son in Mount Holly. The offer was $40 a week.
That's not so shabby.
Which would technically, in our time, would be $200.
Ooh. I'd take $200 extra bucks a week, but I don't want to watch children.
I don't know. I don't want to either. And although Lynn was thrilled with the offer for the $40 a week, her parents didn't give her permission to take the job because it was out of town and they didn't know John Marshall, which I would have done too.
Right.
No way. No way I'm going to get into having somebody that I don't even know be with my child. So John tried again, and this time he called Margaret's number. And unlike Lynn, Margaret's parents reluctantly gave their permission. Which, I mean, if I'm reluctant, I would just say no.
Right. Like, no way. We don't know this dude. Why is he calling? Why is his wife not calling?
If you have any kind of reluctance to say yes, just say no. So Margaret was asked to start that weekend, but not long after the date was set, Marshall called to reschedule to the following Monday, June 24th, due to a death in the family. The Fox family didn't think much of it, and the big day finally arrived. Margaret got herself ready and wrote a note for her parents. Margaret and her younger brother walked to the bus stop at the intersection of High and West Broad Street, which wasn't far from the house. Her brother saw her get on the bus, and that was the last confirmed sighting of Margaret.
Wow.
Once she reached Mount Holly, Margaret's instructions were to get off the bus and make her way to the corner of High and Mill Street to meet John Marshall's wife. She would be driving a red Volkswagen. From that point, the plan was for Mrs. Marshall to drive her to the Marshall household, introduce her to her son, and have her home by 2:30 at the very latest. Margaret was also home when she reached the Marshall's residence, but that call never came. Which, you know what, I'm going to just say, when you're wound up in something, sometimes you do forget. Like, when I was working and it was bad weather, I always would call Frank when I got to work.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were those times where I would end up calling me to make sure I was okay. So I can see how she may have forgotten, but.
Yeah, so I do what, that, like, home and all that kind of stuff.
So one may have assumed Margaret simply got off the bus and was caught up in the excitement of her new job and forgot the important detail, just like I said. But once 2:30 came and went, and Margaret hadn't arrived home, things started to unravel. The family began to worry, and rightly so. I would have been freaking out.
Oh, yeah.
At about 3:30 that afternoon, Margaret's mother decided to call this John Marshall's phone number. But when she called the number, she was told by the person on the other end there was no one by the name of Margaret Fox or John Marshall present. Confused by this information, Margaret's mom called again, and this time was told she was calling a supermarket payphone.
Oh.
I know, my God, my stomach would have shot out my asshole.
Right? Even now, I'm just like, oh, my heart sank.
I know. At this point, panic set in. So, Margaret's mother began frantically calling anyone with the last name of Marshall in Mount Holly. Well, Margaret's father drove there to do a ground search and he actually did this for years after her disappearance.
Why didn't they call the cops? Like, my first thing, if my kid is missing, I don't care how little information I know. Like, that's my first call, is to say, this is the situation. I called the number and it's a payphone. And
exactly.
Like,
I think sometimes, I was thinking about that, Kelly. I think sometimes people think that if they overreact, they're going to look stupid. I'd rather have you overreact and have your kids safe.
Oh, yeah. Like, I will look like a big asshole and be, like, put up, as, like, the, neighborhood alarmist. But no, I don't mess with my kid or.
No. I guess it's a different time back then. It was in the 70s. So maybe this, the overly protective parent wasn't really present at that point in time. Things were a little bit easier back then.
Well, this is the stuff that makes us overprotective today.
Exactly. It's so much different now than it was 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I can remember going out and being out of my house for hours without coming home. My mom would actually, like, bellow out the door to me and my sisters to come home for dinner. But, I mean, it's so much different now than it was then. It was such a nicer time back then because you could trust more people. But apparently in Margaret's case, that wasn't it.
Right.
So, like I said, her father would drive around for hours all over South Jersey with a picture of Margaret plastered all over his car with a bullhorn asking for help in locating her, which is, like, that's heart-wrenching.
It is. But I would do the same thing.
Yep. You know what? I don't care how stupid I look or if people think I'm overreacting. That's my kid.
Mm-hmm.
So after coming up empty, the family called the cops. Just like what you said, why didn't they just call the police first? So for the sake of investigation, all possibilities needed to be explored. When teenagers go missing, the first question is, did they simply run away? But according to the Fox family, Margaret had no reason to run away. And although she was shy and was bullied in the past, she was very well adjusted and had great relationships with her parents. And as far as her family knew, she hadn't started dating. So it seemed unlikely that she'd run off with someone.
Right.
I guess, you know, you have to explore every option, but I mean, sad. So the next question was, did she even make it to Mount Holly? Now, keeping in mind that her brother watched her board the bus with his own eyes, police questioned some other residents near High and Mill Street where Margaret was supposed to have disembarked. And several of them remember seeing a girl fitting her description get off the bus around the time Margaret was to arrive. A woman that was on the bus said she remembered talking to Margaret after her son pulled her hair. That reminds me of that, of a little kid that used to ride, was on the train when we went to Florida, that was kept kicking the seat, and Daryl was saying, kick it again and I'll kill you. But anyway, I know she didn't really mean that, but he didn't kick it again.
He's a wise boy.
Is it funny how you, it's ironic how you read a story like this and then you think about things that happened in your own life.
Mm-hmm.
So another passenger thought he saw Margaret get off the bus at Mill and High Street, which was the stop Margaret was supposed to meet John Marshall's wife. He was also pretty sure he saw her talking to a man in a red sports car. So a few others also saw this girl that matched Margaret's description at the intersection. So with that said, there's no denying that John Marshall, or whoever he was most likely responsible for Margaret's disappearance. But unfortunately, all they had on him was his fictitious name and that from the sound of his voice. I mean, and it's kind of hard to tell who somebody is from the sound of their voice or how old they are. But
right.
They said he seemed to be between 35 and 45. And he may have been driving a red Volkswagen, which was really isn't much to go on.
Which, yes, I'm trying to think of like what sports cars Volkswagen would have had back.
Yeah, I know. I think then. What they're calling a sports car may have been like a convertible Volkswagen. But
yeah, that
I mean,
be.
As far as knowing somebody's age by their voice, I mean, I've had I've picked up the phone before and had my sister-in-law say, when Lauren was little, hi, Lauren, is mommy home? So, I mean, anybody's voice can sound younger than it really is.
Right.
So it was assumed that his name was fake. By all accounts, the man was a phantom. So that's on June 28th. 4 days into Margaret's disappearance, the Fox household received a call from a man. And while he refused to identify himself, it seemed like it was none other than the man he called Marshall. Mrs. Fox had picked up the phone, and this is what the person on the other end said.
$10,000 might be a lot of bread, but your daughter's life is the butter topic.
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a moment to gush about Anchor and how easy it is to make a podcast. First off, it's free. If it's free, it's for me. And who doesn't like free stuff? They have creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. So you can do it on the run, or if you're bored at lunch, you can fidget with your editing. Anchor will also distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many other podcast streaming networks. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
The clip is brief, but nonetheless disturbing.
Yeah,
the caller wanted $10,000 in ransom, which is the equivalent of approximately $50,000 today. So this message was reiterated again the following day when the Fox family received a ransom note in the mail that repeated what was said on the call and added that the $10,000 should be placed in a box with a blue ribbon. The letter was signed "So Long Again" with the emphasis on the letters S, L, and A. This was never actually confirmed, but between 1973 and 75, there was a left-wing terrorist organization called the Sebanese Liberation Army, which is known by its acronym SLA. They committed several crimes, such as bank robberies and other acts of violence, 4 months before Margaret went missing. And the SLA became internationally notorious for the abduction of 19-year-old granddaughter of publishing magnate William Randolph Hearst, which is, you guessed it, Patty Hearst.
That's an interesting story.
I know it is. I'm not sure if this group asked for money for themselves, but I do know that they demanded the Hearst family to give $70 in food to every needy person in Santa Rosa, California, which ended up costing them approximately $2 million.
Wow.
Then they were told to give $6 million more because they didn't think that the $2 million was quite enough. And then they would negotiate for Patty's return. Little off topic, but she never actually was returned. She was caught on bank surveillance camera participating in an armed robbery and then again spotted robbing some sort of a store. She later said that she was brainwashed, which makes me wonder, was Margaret maybe brainwashed too? And that's why she hasn't been able to be located.
Heck be.
So, I mean, there's a lot of what ifs going on here. So, I mean, that Patty Hearst story, though, Kelly, we should probably look into that a little bit more. It seems kind of interesting.
It really is. They did
it's
a drunk
going down a rabbit hole with this story.
On it. Yeah.
So, fingerprints were lifted from this letter, but no matches were found. The family was, of course, willing to pay, but no clear method of delivery for the money was outlined. On July 1st, just a couple days later, another letter arrived. And this time it said that the deal was off and that the Fox family had, quote, goofed. But the most chilling thing about the letter is that it once again reiterated the line about bread and butter, but in the past tense. $10,000 was a lot of bread, but your daughter's life was the bread and the butter topping.
Ooh.
So now they're talking about her in the past tense. So from here, things seem to go cold, aside from a small and very brief lead in 1975 involving an ex-con named Charles Cobridge from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. In November of that year, Charles confessed to the kidnapping and killing of Margaret Fox, but investigators quickly recovered that this was impossible since Charles was in the hospital the day of Margaret's disappearance. Honestly, though, Kelly, he could have had an accomplice.
Mm-hmm.
He could have been in the hospital when somebody else snatched her up.
And security in hospitals wasn't that great back then.
It's not so great now.
That's true.
So as a result of all this, he was sentenced to 3 years in prison for a false claim. This aside, the attorneys as well as the Fox family had absolutely nothing to go on. There were other reports of someone trying to lure girls to a fake babysitting job at the time. However, that too went nowhere. I don't know how that didn't go anywhere, Kelly.
Right, because I would...
reports of it. How did it not go somewhere?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Make me frustrated. So their independent searches came up empty. And even with the FBI now involved, nothing seemed to be surfacing, which had to be frustrating. All they had was one ransom call, but investigation couldn't even be sure if it was, in fact, the same person who answered Margaret's ad. Now, keeping in mind, Margaret's disappearance had was already in the news, and detectives were open to the possibility that this was either a prank or maybe someone completely unrelated was looking to profit from the tragedy. So maybe somebody was doing all this just to, you know, cash in, which is really sick.
Right? Freaking vultures.
Yeah, exactly. Luckily, the call was recovered by the investigators who anticipated this may happen. And although Mr. Fox had spoken to John Marshall directly, he was unable to confirm he was and was the ransomer of, and the same person. So he heard this person's voice, but he couldn't say whether or not they were the same person. So there was another lead that quickly got diminished because it was deemed to be more of an odd coincidence. So remember I mentioned the fake number of John Marshall? So right. He provided was from a payphone, and the payphone was in front of a grocery store. So the officer on the case was quite familiar with this since his friend of 25 years worked as a manager there at that store, and his name was Jack Marshall.
Oh.
I know, that's interesting, huh? So yeah. It's almost like this person is using someone else's name, or was it in fact John Marshall? So naturally, this made everyone suspicious, and Jack was brought in for questioning. He provided an alibi for the morning of Margaret's disappearance and took a polygraph and passed. He was quickly cleared. Jack was not only a longtime friend of the officer on the case, but interestingly enough, many people in town also vouched for his innocence, including Margaret's sister-in-law, who coincidentally was a friend of John Marshall's. There were no further leads. So 4 years later, a suspect emerged. He was a sex offender who lived near the bus stop that Margaret was supposedly to meet John Marshall at. Besides his criminal record and the fact that he lived close to the location Margaret went missing, and he drove a red car, he too had an airtight alibi for the morning Margaret vanished and was cleared as a suspect. It's like this.
Right.
So years later, a retired Willingsboro officer, his name is Michael D. also, launched his own investigation with two other retired Burlington City detectives who worked on the initial case. And their names were Jack McBride and Leonard Burr. And they came up with a theory after reading her diary, which contained several passages about her being bullied. They thought it might be possible that Margaret disappeared to start a new life, but admitted it would be difficult for a 14-year-old to start over in a different area and have no contact with family. I think that lead is very, it's very far-fetched.
That cracks me up because, like, so I know 14-year-olds, and yes, they're always, you know, like, I can't wait to get out of this house, but there's not, especially in the 70s, like, all right, I gotta get fake ID, I gotta get a job to pay rent. It's like, no, you're obvious. And back then, you could tell when kids were 14 versus like adults, not like today, yeah. But it's like, no, it would have been so hard. Like, that's so dumb. Why would they even think that?
And 14 then was like our 8-year-olds.
Right. That'd be like, as, like, fuck this, I'm done. And she just goes and like, yeah, starts and a new life somewhere.
Although I do have a friend whose sister ran away when she was like 13 or 14, and she bought herself a fur.
Oh, shit.
When she ran away, it's like, she knows how to run away.
Right. You got to do it right.
Years passed, and eventually decades. Things seemingly came to a standstill until 2019, when the anniversary of Margaret's disappearance, the FBI decided to release the audio recording of the ransom call. Many people thought it bizarre that investigators didn't release the call when the case was still fresh, but according to them, it wasn't possible without modern technology used to enhance the audio. Margaret's disappearance was incredibly hard on her family. Her father, David, said that early in the mornings and late at night were the hardest times because that's when it was the quietest. Sadly, both he and his wife, Mary, passed away after years of anguish and helplessness. So sad.
The day it makes you wonder if they'll find the...
And most think she was murdered. The FBI currently is offering a $25,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and the disappearance of Margaret. It's difficult to say if this is too little too late at this point, or if the recording even matters at all.
Well, the person might be dead who did it. Because if they were 35.
I didn't realize who she really is.
Right.
Remember, it's unclear if this is nothing more than a hoax, but regardless, the FBI has placed enough stock on that call to make it public and has offered $25,000 reward to anyone that may have any kind of information in this case. The release was accompanied by an age progression photo, which I'll post on our social media, to approximate what Margaret may look like now. And Margaret's date of birth was February 4th, 1960. Time of her disappearance, she had brown hair, blue eyes, and freckles, and stood 5'2" and weighed 105 pounds. Two of Margaret's top front teeth were missing, and she wore eyeglasses. She was last seen wearing jeans, with a yellow patch on the knee, a blue or flowered blouse, which wasn't sure. Some people said it was blue, some people said it was flowered.
It could have been blue with flowers.
Checkered jacket and brown sandals. She was also wearing a gold necklace with flowers, with a blue stone in it, a gold charm bracelet with a blue stone, and was carrying an eyeglass case with a Huckleberry Hound design on it.
Hmm.
If you think you have any information would help solve this case, please contact your local FBI office or the nearest American embassy or consulate, or call the Burlington City Police at 60-386-3300. Very wow. Sad.
It is. And it's, but I mean, I'm a realist, so I think that the likelihood of actually finding the person alive who did this is very slim.
I know. And what's so sad, Kelly, is that her parents both died not knowing whatever happened to her.
Right.
And I think that's the saddest thing.
Yeah. That's all everybody wants, just closure.
Like, there's pictures of her that of, like, age progression. But, I mean, it just, it seems kind of, like, I don't understand how people can go missing and never be found. But, like on a last podcast, there's so many people that go missing and that are unidentified, like the Christmas tree lady.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really sad.
It is, but some of them don't want to be found.
Exactly, but this is why you're overly protective with your children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I never let Lauren go to anybody's house. I didn't already know their parents, and there were never sleepovers. Although she never wanted to sleep over anyway.
As love sleepovers. But we have our, you know, again, it's friends. It's not like, or, you know, we haven't. Well, thank you, COVID, that we haven't done any slumber parties or anything like that.
But her friends are your friends.
Like, yeah, you know, exactly.
So it's a little different.
Hmm. Yeah, because I'm like, I can sleep over too.
Exactly. I don't ever remember Lauren asking for a sleepover. I remember like a day play date. But, like, she was that kind of kid, like, an hour into it, she's like, when are they leaving?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, we as love sleepovers, and I usually have fun at hanging.
I know. We had a sleepover.
That, oh, we had a lot of fun.
We should do that again.
Yes. That, and Scattergories was so much fun.
Let's just say, Kelly came over for New Year's Eve, but me being the good hostess that I am, wouldn't allow her up the stairs until she took a COVID test. And I feel bad that I did that, but I appreciate that Kelly understood where I was coming from.
Yeah, but listen, I'm in public health. You got to do what you got to do. And right now, things are a mess.
So we have to plan another sleepover for you, and I have a COVID test with your name on it.
Okay.
People, this is what you have to do now. You want to spend time with your friends? Go ahead and do it, but be safe.
Yeah. And then we're going to have some exciting news about me, some changes to our design, too.
We are. I'm so excited. So, Kelly and I have put some thought into our artwork, and we've decided we need a little change up. So, when do you want that to happen, Kelly?
Should we do it next week?
I think next week is a great idea. And I want everybody to go on our social media and let us know what they think of it.
All right, guys. Well, until next time. Bye.
Find us at patreon.com/shinythingspodcast. Follow us on Instagram at Shiny Things Podcast. Find us on our Facebook group page called Shiny Things Podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at ShinyThingsPod1. You can email us at ShinyThingsPodcast@gmail.com. Don't be shy. Use any of our social media to send us show ideas, some love, or share additional details we may have missed. Remember to like us and give us 5 stars on your favorite podcasting platform. Until next time, thanks for listening.